Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my co-host and esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how some cardinal sins literally turned the World Series around. We'll discuss the longtime gambling axiom that a loser saved is actually better than a winner earned. And one team coming off of a bye week might make some giant improvements.
Dave, let's start with first takes for today. We had Monday Night Football last night, World Series. What'd you see that you want to share?
How can it be anything, Teddy, but the St. Louis Cardinals in one of the more bizarre baseball games you're ever going to see? 41 Cardinals came to the plate last night. 17 of them reached base. Two of them scored. That's not easy to do. We'll talk about that in a few moments, about some of the particulars. But think about this for a pitching line when you go to break this one down in your record books. Alexi Ogando faced seven batters, got two of them out, five of them reached base, not a single run charged against them. Five of seven guys reach, and your earned run average actually goes down. Teddy, what stood out to you most on the Monday board?
Well, I got to be honest, Dave. Something happened to me last night. It doesn't happen every week, but it happens once in a while. I fell asleep before halftime last night of the Monday Night Football game with the World Series on one TV and the Monday Night Football game on the other. Doesn't happen a lot, but sometimes, I mean, you know, Dave, you and I both work 16, 18 hours a day all weekend long. Sometimes you run out of gas. So the question then comes, what do you do when you fall asleep during a game? I'm a watcher. I'm not someone that likes to rely on box score data to have my opinions cemented about these teams. So when I don't get the chance to watch a full game, this is exactly what I do. I'm going to read two game recaps, one from each of the two newspapers that for the hometown newspapers where the teams were playing. The second thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the play-by-play. I'm not a big box score guy. I'll look at the box score numbers, but the play-by-play gives you a much better sense of how the game actually went down than the box score will. Again, it's not like everyone can watch every game. It just doesn't happen. It's not realistic. And for me last night, it wasn't even realistic to get in with a halftime wager of one sort or another. But the bottom line is that when you don't get the opportunity to watch these games, there are certainly ways you can learn about everything that happened in a fashion that gives you decent knowledge moving forward. Let's start now with Market Watch. We have new numbers up for World Series game number 6 as the series shifts back to St. Louis. Tomorrow, Jaime Garcia, versus Colby Lewis. Right now, the number St. Louis minus 115, total of 7.5.
And now some fresh NFL up from Monday night's results. You've got Houston, 9.5 and 41.5 over Jacksonville. And that powerful Baltimore Raven offense now laying 12.5, total of 44 against Arizona.
Yeah, and really, last night, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard watching those two games. There was a reason that I fell asleep early before the games were fully in play last night. And, of course, you know, we had St. Louis with a base stealer thrown out after a missed sign. We have Mark Sapinski facing Mike Napoli in the bottom of the eighth instead of Jason Mott. And, Dave, that's certainly the whole Sapinski-Mott fiasco in the Cardinals' bullpen. We have to talk about that first.
Yeah, here's something you couldn't get out of the box score, but you do have to read the papers to find out why. Why did that happen? Why wasn't it Jason Mott out there against Napoli? Bad connection with the St. Louis phones. Here's the quote from Tony La Russa, and we're flabbergasted by this. The bullpen didn't hear Mott's name. They heard Lynn. Lance Lynn started warming up instead of Jason Mott. Here's the problem. The first time Lynn throws a pitch in the bullpen, don't you see that? Don't you notice that somehow and think, wait a minute, that's not the guy that I wanted to have warming up? Can you have a World Series decided on something like that? I mean, think about this. We're talking about a world championship that will go down in the record books forever. And two of the key Texas wins in this series that have them up 3-2, Ian Kinsler running through a stop sign in the ninth inning of game number 2, and then last night, the Cardinals literally having the wrong guy warming up in the bullpen. That's a heck of a way to win a championship.
But it's a championship that should Texas be able to seal the deal in St. Louis in either Game 6 or Game 7. The championship, no asterisk next to it, despite the bizarre way that it may come about. Now let's break down what happened in Jacksonville last night, where the Baltimore offense was a little bit offensive for anyone like myself with an over ticket in their pocket. And it was a strange way that the offense was so offensive for Baltimore last night. They only had 12 running plays all game compared to 41 passing plays. Ray Rice carried from scrimmage on only 8 of the 53 snaps for Baltimore. And the team as a whole wasn't laughing about what happened after the game. Here's a great quote from Terrell Suggs on the defensive side of the football, talking about his opinion of the play calling last night. Quote, "It baffles me that Ray Rice had only 8 carries. I don't really know what the game plan was. When I have a Pro Bowl running back and he's not getting his touches, I'm going to feel some kind of way about it. I have to question how many catches Anquan had. Ray Rice is a phenomenal player. You have to use your phenomenal players. We've got guys on this team that can do some great things. We have to use those guys. It's just that simple."
So what happens when a player says that in the locker room? The reporters can't help but rush over to the coaches. In this case, offense coordinator Cam Cameron said, "Look, this is what Terrell Suggs just said." So now we've got this dramatic moment coming up. The coach is going to dump all over the player, saying, "No, I had the right game plan. Here's what we were trying to do, and my defensive players might not be sophisticated enough to understand." Wrong. Here's Cameron's response. "Hey, I agree with him wholeheartedly. In every game, we have to make sure Ray Rice is involved." So the question becomes, Cam, if you agree, what were you doing? It's not like you were trailing big in the game. You know, you were within one touchdown of the lead deep, deep, deep into that game. You could have stayed inside of your game plan. Ray Rice gets 8 runs from scrimmage out of those 53 snaps. What were you thinking? If you agree with Terrell Suggs, you're the one calling the plays. Why didn't it happen?
We value your feedback. We look forward to your input, and we're getting great questions every day via email. Please keep those emails coming in. We're going to answer questions on today's show and every show. The email address, sportsday@covers.com. Of course, we got that toll-free listener rant line. Still waiting for a rant good enough that we can play it on air. Come on, guys. 866-966-4599. That's the number to dial in. And, of course, you can get involved in the covers.com community, covers.com/posting forum. Active threads going right now in the Vegas Sports Day section. When we come back, it's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
Hi, I'm Chris Phillips from Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And if you stop by the studio, our producer Scott's going to buy everybody a drink.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up. Let's get those surgical gloves on. Time for the postmortem, where we go inside the operating room to take you deep into the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
And let's start with the Tennessee Volunteers. A little bit of talk here about maybe the toughest two-game sequence any team in the country is going to face this year. They played LSU and Alabama in back-to-back weeks. And if you're Derek Dooley in Tennessee, you probably couldn't ask for worse timing. The starting quarterback, Tyler Bray, out. Star wide receiver, Justin Hunter, out. Neither guy available to play against the two best teams in the country right now. So the Vols came in. They hung around for a half in both those games. The second halves, each time, were particularly ugly. How about outscored 52-0 in the second half of those two ball games against elite-level SEC competition? So the Vols, you know, you don't have much depth on the team. The losses like that crash the team's psyche, particularly when they're coming facing an opponent like South Carolina, a good defensive foe, coming into town this week. What do we think from Tennessee, Dave? Are the Vols capable of bouncing back from those type of defeats?
Got a little different scenario playing out in Knoxville right now. So many times at this point in the season, we look for teams that we would classify as towel tossers. Just a little bit too beat up physically and mentally to play the rest of the way out. And we've got a few of those that we'll be talking about over the course of the week. Different track going on in Tennessee. So we use the idea of searching for volunteers. Derek Dooley's going to play the rest of the season differently. You're going to see a lot of young kids out there this week trying to get a spark ignited. It's even going to start a quarterback, Justin Worley, a freshman from Rock Hill, South Carolina, the same state of the opponent they're going to play. So a little bit of an edge because he wasn't recruited by South Carolina. So what Dooley is trying to do is he's trying to establish that we're going to keep playing this season. We're going to use our freshmen. I don't care if the upperclassmen are beat up. We have something left to do. Let's use his quotes to sort of address that because I think it'll set the tone for what we're going to see. I've never worried about red shirts. I just don't care. These guys, they don't worry about staying for 4 years anymore. So why should we worry about red shirts? They come out in three. When they stop coming out in three, we'll start redshirting them. That's the interesting part. And the reason he's talking about that red shirt, quarterback Worley was going to be redshirted. Remember, Tyler Bray's only a sophomore. So your ideal scenario would be Bray comes back as a junior next year. Now he goes for 2 years, and then Worley has three full seasons after that. Now you're burning up a full season from him. But how confident is he in the performance of the quarterback this week? This quote's a little bit enlightening. I don't know what it's going to look like on Saturday. I'm doing it with a little less expectation of what I'll see. I just think it's the right thing to do. Now we're going to switch to Pittsburgh and what would seemingly be the most fascinating matchup of the week and one that has not played out that way. Tom Brady has simply dominated Dick LeBeau. So why are we showing you Rob Gronkowski? There's a reason for that, and we'll get to it in a moment. But let's deal with these Brady numbers first. Against Dick LeBeau, 5-1 straight up and against the spread. And we mentioned LeBeau, the Steeler defensive coordinator. Obviously, these are numbers against Pittsburgh. 5-1 straight up and against the spread. Four of those wins by 13 points or more. About 68.1% completions, 12 touchdown passes, only three interceptions, and 337 passing yards per game. Note how significant that is. Of all teams that Brady has faced three times or more, that's 35 more yards per game than against anybody else. And that's despite the fact that Pittsburgh has been at or near the top of the NFL defensive standings in every one of those games. What gives in this Brady versus LeBeau matchup?
Well, it's real simple, Dave. The bottom line is that Tom Brady and the Patriots exploit Dick LeBeau's defense like no other team in the NFL. And, of course, like most things that we do with New England, we have to give credit to that Patriots coaching staff. Now, LeBeau likes big linebackers on the outside that can stuff the run and rush the passer. He's made a living signing, drafting, and bringing those guys in, those type of linebackers in, and they work against most teams. Where those linebackers tend to struggle is when they have to play one-on-one coverage against the pass catchers out of the backfield or at the tight end positions. Running back and tight ends running downfield in the passing game can really make it difficult for those linebackers that LeBeau likes to use. So we look at what happened last year, a 39-26 Patriots win at Heinz Field, the same field they'll play this coming Sunday. And boy, you look at Brady's numbers, 30 of 43, 350 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. He wasn't sacked in the ballgame. So when we extrapolate from those numbers and we take a look at the distribution, six different running backs or tight ends caught at least one ball. And Rob Gronkowski, who we showed earlier, had five catches for 72 yards and a touchdown. So sometimes it's not just the base stats that we need to look at. It's the particulars of a given matchup that set things up and tell the real tale.
When we come back, your mail, our answers to your mail, and a day for the ages from Dominic Davis. You're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
I'm Courtney Leone. This is Vegas Video Network. You want me to mention awkward silence?
Yeah. Let's do that then, okay. Never been on set here before. I'm always out live on location for Awkward Silence 2.1. I'm Courtney Leone, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. Good, better.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's start with some viewer emails. We're getting great questions every day. And here's one from Terry in Buffalo. Quote, you have mentioned a couple of times that teams coming off bye weeks this season have struggled. But is this something that other teams and coaches will pay attention to? If they see that teams have struggled, will they make adjustments in their own preparations?
That's a good question. We don't have an answer. One of the most frustrating things that we do, day in and day out, is we'll spot something inside of a matchup that we think can be exploited, and the coaches won't pick up on it because they just won't see it. They might not have seen something on film that we saw. They might not have seen the opponent enough. Teddy yesterday talked about how these teams coming off of a bye have struggled, particularly with the new collective bargaining agreement. Do the coaches now say, wait, these teams have really struggled. We might want to change our practice week preparation. We don't know. So it's an awfully good question. If we see some coach talking about that this week, because that's what we're looking for. We're looking to see someone making that reference. You know what? I saw how bad Tennessee looked. We're not going to do what Tennessee did. Then we'll bring it to you. But so far, we haven't seen that yet. Now let's go to a letter from Dan in Michigan. Say someone needs to make $50,000 pre-tax to live. Obviously, Dan doesn't have a lot of children. What amount of capital would they realistically need to do this? You can base this off of your own betting numbers and experience. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, and it's not an easy question to answer, Dan. The bottom line is now's a good opportunity to bring in the concept of realistic expectations. If you're a professional bettor, any kind of bettor, if you're an amateur bettor, if you're a recreational bettor, if you're a sharp, if you're a square, it doesn't matter. About the best you can hope to do is to hit 6 out of 10. 60% is a phenomenal run. It's a phenomenal season. And if you're hitting 60% with your bets, you're going to make a lot of money. A realistic goal might be closer to 55% of all of your wagers. That's, frankly, a fairly realistic goal, which means you're going to win 11 and lose 9 out of every 20 bets that you make. As a realistic goal, it's not being red hot, it's not being ice cold, it's a profitable endeavor, hitting 55% over the course of any campaign. So when we talk about those type of numbers, if you're betting a dime a game, you're betting $1,000 a game, and you're going to lay 11 to win 10, you know, we're not going to talk about reduced juice here. Over the course of a month, let's say you make 80 bets. So you're going to win 44 of those bets. You're going to lose 36 of those bets. So you're going to win $44,000. You're going to lose $39,600, which gives you a net return of about $4,400. That's certainly within your goal of making $50,000 a year. The problem with that is now you're taking your living expenses out of your bankroll. And frankly, that's the entire reason I'm in the sports service industry. That's why I'm not just sitting here betting my own plays. That's why I give out recommendations to clients as well. I use my bankroll and just leave that money in there and let it grow and grow and grow. That's my 401k. And then I use my other job, you know, as a sports service provider. That pays my monthly nut. And it allows me to do what I want to do with my bankroll without going nuts and cutting into that bankroll every single month, taking money out to pay my expenses. That's the choice that I made and the way I decided to do it here in Las Vegas. Obviously, you coming out here probably wouldn't have that same capability as an earner in the sports service industry right off the bat. So you need to adjust for that. Bottom line is, coming out to Vegas hoping to earn $50,000 a year, I wouldn't recommend doing it without at least a $100,000 bankroll. And now, let's go inside the numbers.
Of course, one of the things we learned before we went on the air today is that one of us doesn't have Christmas presents as part of his expense list. Now, we should have had that part mic'd up a little bit. At top of the show, we talked about the idea that a loser prevented is actually worth more than a winner earned. And Teddy just explained it the proper way. You know, when you're laying 11 to 10, you're going to bet $1,000, you're going to win $1,000, you're going to lose $1,100. Big part of what we do isn't always searching for winners, it's trying to avoid losers. So today we're going to tie this segment in a little bit with our Insider Six-Pack, a game that ordinarily we'd be going to the windows to play. Navy is a big underdog against Notre Dame. We may not. Part of it is what Dominic Davis did against the Navy defense on Saturday. When we go inside the numbers to break that game down, you're going to see that it was truly a game for the ages. In the first half of that game, it was 26 out of 26 passing for 252 yards. Take it back to what he did in the previous game, and it was 36 consecutive completions, an all-time NCAA record that will last seemingly forever. That was a remarkable performance by Davis. But, of course, what happens is when someone does something real well, someone else did something very poorly. We're going to tie that back in a few minutes.
We certainly will, David. In fact, we're going to tie it in after this brief message coming up. All the news you need to know in our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
It's time to crack the tab on today's Insider Six-Pack. And let's start with the Navy team we were just talking about, the team that was exploited by Dominic Davis last week. And, of course, when we talk about how good Davis's numbers were, we also have to talk about how bad Navy's numbers were. What's good for one team, not so good for the other. And that's giving us some interesting stuff to note as Navy travels to South Bend this week to face Notre Dame. Now, Navy as a big underdog has been terrific for our pockets over the years, Dave. They're on a 17-6 run as double-digit underdogs. Both you and I, Mr. Malinsky, cashed a ticket with Navy earlier this year as double-digit dogs at South Carolina, a 24-21 Navy loss, but wire-to-wire cover. It makes sense that Navy's going to cover as a double-digit dog. They bring all the intangibles for this particular type of wager. Lots of discipline. They play hard through the final gun. But before we look at the generous points being offered at Navy this week as they travel to Notre Dame, we have to take a look at some pretty ugly defensive numbers. The midshipmen, number 103 in the country against the run, number 111 in pass efficiency, number 110 in sacks, number 117 in tackles for loss. This is not a vintage Navy defense.
A few minutes ago, we talked about what Derek Dooley was doing at Tennessee, getting to that point in the season where things might be getting away from the team a little bit, and you want to skew young. Paul Rhodes might be doing the same thing at Iowa State. Off of that loss to Texas A&M Saturday, sort of knew that that was their last shot to get into bowl position. Now, they would need four more wins. They've got to play Oklahoma, Oklahoma State later. They're going to be double-digit dogs, it looks like, in every game the remainder of the season. So Rhodes does what we like to see some coaches do to help keep your team's focus in. Change a quarterback. It'll be redshirt freshman Jared Barnett getting the start this week. Played pretty well off the bench against Texas A&M. Good athletic runner. Passing's going to need a little bit of work, but he's going to get some experience now. He's from Garland, Texas. He'll get a start at Texas Tech this week. This is Paul Rhodes' way of saying, we're not going to go to a bowl this year, but let me see what I can do to keep the kids interested and start building to next year.
If you watched the Panthers play the Redskins this past Sunday, you saw a decent performance from the new Washington starting quarterback, John Beck. Beck hit some big throws. He was able to see the field very well. He was able to scramble out of the pocket, ran on a nice play into the end zone, scoring a Redskins touchdown. But he also made a fair few mistakes in that ballgame, mistakes that essentially ended up costing Washington the ballgame. Those mistakes might be a little bit more plentiful this week because, boy, the Redskins' skill position talent around John Beck is really getting banged up. They've already lost starting tight end Chris Cooley, a former Pro Bowl performer. This week, it looks like they're going to be without Santana Moss, the team's leading receiver. He's already been ruled out, broken bone in his left hand. And to make matters worse, leading rusher Tim Hightower limped off the field last Sunday. He's lost for the season with a torn ACL. Redskins, skill position talent, injuries really starting to mount.
Things get dark in Washington, but in their own division, it's getting a little bit brighter for the Giants. Giants coming off the bye, and as Teddy talked about on yesterday's show, teams have struggled in that role this year. Maybe a little bit different for New York. That off week has allowed a lot of players who've been missing time to get back in the rotation. Now practicing for the Giants, Brandon Jacobs, Chris Snee, Justin Tuck, Prince Amukamara. That's some pretty nice talent to have coming back into a team that struggled a little bit early, but now is going to go on Sunday at full strength.
The Houston Texans, a dominating road win against Tennessee this past weekend, was most assuredly a very positive sign for a team looking for that elusive playoff berth. And they were able to do it, of course, without their best player on offense, the wide receiver Andre Johnson, and their best player on defense, the pass-rushing linebacker Mario Williams. But that win didn't come without a price for Houston. The injuries continue to mount for the Texans, particularly in the secondary. Safety Daniel Manning suffered a broken leg at Tennessee. He underwent surgery yesterday on Monday. But let's take a note here. The Texans did not put Manning on injured reserve in what looked like a season-ending injury. Why didn't they do it? They're hoping he can be back for the playoffs. Washington making moves thinking that they're going to Washington. Houston making moves thinking that they're going to be playing in January. And that's certainly a positive, confidence-inducing sign for the team moving forward. Looks like Roy Nolan is going to replace Daniel Manning in the starting lineup this week and look for the Texans to bring in some type of a backup at safety at some point over the next few days.
Bad news in Arizona, but it could have been worse. Beanie Wells will not need surgery on his knee. That's the good news. Not going to be out for the season. Going to be out for several weeks, though. Wells has been off to a terrific start this year. 423 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns, 4.6 per carry. He was really coming into his own. The problem at Arizona, there just isn't much behind him. The rotation for this week looks like Alphonso Smith, Lerod Stevens-Howling, Chester Taylor. That's tough to game plan around when you're on the road against that Baltimore defensive front.
And when we come back, we're going to put all of this news to work for you. It's money time.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Okay, guys, it's money time! Let's go to the Downtown Athletic Club in New York City. Maybe it's a little bit early to do that, not just yet. But we've had several of you ask us questions about the 2011 Heisman Trophy race, so let's get to it. Here are the latest odds from one of the most respected sports books in the industry. We have Andrew Luck, 5-2 as the favorite. Tony Richardson, the Alabama running back, at 5-1. Brandon Weeden from Oklahoma State, 8-1. Kellen Moore, the Boise quarterback, 12-1. Taj Boyd from Clemson, 20-1. Case Keenum, 30-1. Denard Shoelace Robinson, 30-1. Matt Barkley, 30-1. Sammy Watkins, 50-1. Robert Griffin, 75-1. These are the top 10 guys right now in that Heisman Trophy race, according to this respected sports book. What's your take, Dave? What do you think of these numbers?
We usually don't look at the Heisman race year in and year out, and this tells us a lot why. We're way out of it on this. I was actually dumbfounded when we looked these up yesterday. And keep in mind, that's just the top 10. You've got Landry Jones and a lot of other players that are extended out even further. If I have to put a ballot in right now, Robert Griffin is 1 or 2. They've got him out there number 10 at 75-1. What that's telling me is I'm wrong, because this is all based on perception. I may think that Robert Griffin has been the best player so far this year. No one else does. Can we fault Andrew Luck at the top? No, we can't. And we know what the arguments we're going to get from some of you going forward. We're going to get emails saying, look at his numbers. They just don't add up. The stats aren't that impressive. Now, he is the best football player we've seen. Griffin might be having the best season. Andrew Luck is the best player. And here's why. When you look at the Luck highlights, they show the wrong things. They'll show him completing a pass downfield. They'll actually show him making that one-handed catch against UCLA that I think we're going to see over and over again as we get closer to the Heisman. What they don't show is Luck at the line of scrimmage changing a play a la Peyton Manning, a la Tom Brady, maybe does it better than anyone we've ever seen at the college level to get his team into the right position for easy execution. So much of what Stanford does doesn't show Luck's brilliance physically, it's his brilliance mentally. It's those decisions that put him up there. His numbers are not going to be special, that he's been a special player.
Look, the Heisman Trophy is the single stupidest award in all of sports. There's nothing dumber than the Heisman Trophy. And this is why, okay? The Heisman Trophy is determined by all the voters from the Downtown Athletic Club. If you ever look in the audience of the Downtown Athletic Club when they're doing the Heisman, I'm not an ageist, but we're talking about octogenarians here. We're talking about the oldest of the old. We're talking about a lot of people that don't watch college football. What do? Well, they've been grandfathered in. They've been great-grandfathered in. They've been great-great-grandfathered in. These are not college football fans. These are not astute college football observers. These are not guys who are spending Saturdays watching 30 games every week. These are guys who are reading their newspaper, their local newspaper. So the Heisman Award is absolutely a popularity contest. It's about who gets the most hype. It's about who gets the best publicity kits from their university that they're able to send out to these voters. It's a joke. And, of course, if it's a joke, let's make money off it, because there's only one person that has a chance to win this, and that's Andrew Luck. I honestly don't think that let's see what happens over the back end of the season, because certainly Stanford's schedule down the stretch is going to be much more difficult than it's been over the first half of the campaign. Still have games against the likes of Oregon and Notre Dame, which could test Luck. But the bottom line is, it's his to lose. I honestly don't think anyone else has a realistic chance of bringing home the trophy, the Heisman Trophy from that Downtown Athletic Club. Dave?
So now let's go to Miami, where no one from the Downtown Athletic Club is likely to be watching, but we know you will be. We've got an intriguing Sun Belt matchup of former powers having tough seasons. Florida International now around 6.5-point favorite. Total of 55 against Troy State. When they first put the schedule out, it looked like they were going to close October with a showdown for first place in the conference. That's certainly not what we have now.
It certainly isn't, Dave. The bottom line for both FIU and Troy, they struggled. Troy, back-to-back conference losses for the first time since 2005 in their last two ball games, and three consecutive defeats, all straight up and against the spread. And they haven't just lost those games. They've lost those games by margin. How about this? A three-game sequence in which Troy was outscored by 70.5 points against the spread. That's the single worst three-game cycle of any team in college football this year. So Troy has not lived up to those market expectations. The sophomore quarterback, Corey Robinson, certainly gone through some growing pains in recent weeks. Same story for FIU, however. This is a team that got out to a real hot start this year. They've lost three of their last four, including a couple of straight-up losses as favorite, and one of those as double-digit chalk.
To make a starting point, last year's game between these two, because it was fascinating to see. We didn't think there was that big of a talent disparity in the trenches between these programs. And when they went to Troy last year, Florida International didn't look like a Sun Belt contender necessarily, not the bowl team they ended up being. But last year, a 52-35 win. Look at some of these offensive numbers. 668 yards, 448 rushing. They had touchdowns of 80, 61, 55, and 52 yards. That's 9.7 yards per play. Now, as always, we've got two ways of looking at this. One is there's the physical dominance. They pushed Troy around. Does it mean that could be there again? Or do the films of that nightmare inspire Troy for this setting?
Well, here's a quote from Troy defensive tackle Tony Davis that kind of speaks volumes about how the Trojans are thinking about this ballgame. Quote, "I still think about that to the day. It would definitely be sweet revenge to go down there and beat them on national TV. It still leaves a better taste." And Troy has been the type of team that's been hanging around very well in these national TV games. They played a lot of big games in recent years, and they've gone 9-3 in straight-up fashion in these ESPN or ESPN2 contests over the last few years. And two of the three losses came in overtime, both of which came in bowl games. On the other hand, Florida International had the cameras and lights on them last week when they went up to Louisiana, or Arkansas State, I should say. They did not respond well to that pressure-packed setting. They were outrushed 238-66 at Arkansas State last Tuesday night. And to make matters worse for FIU, we saw some issues with both the punting and the kicking teams, really struggling kicking the ball downfield and really struggling on their kickoff coverage, giving opposing teams good field position. Those are not good stats when we're talking about a team laying close to a touchdown.
Ready for a little drum roll then?
Is yeah.
That sound like? Okay, let's go. Let's
Absolutely.
Do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, give me a little sound effect here, would you?
No, I don't do sound effects.
Go brrrr.
I don't have to. You just did.
Okay. Covers play of the day for Tuesday. We're going to take Troy State plus 6.5. That's the current numbers. Look for the Trojans to hang around, maybe win this game outright. Troy plus the points. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. And that's going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thanks so much for spending time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.